Can't hear me. Everybody can hear good. This is a time and place scheduled in the City Commission hearing room in Rolla, North Dakota for the administrative hearing in the matter of the siting application of Sequoia Energy U.S. Incorporated. Would everybody please shut off their cell phones and electrical devices so we have a good hearing today. Thank you very much. In September of this year, the Office of Administrative Hearings received a request from the Public Service Commission to provide an administrative law judge to preside in this matter. For the record, my name is Alan Hoberg. I'm the duly designated hearing officer for this hearing today. We'll take appearances from the parties and commission staff first, starting with the applicant, Sequoia. Mr. Morrison, please.
Judge Hoberg, my name is John Morrison, P.O. Box 2798, Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm with Crowley Fleck, PLLP in Bismarck, and I'm representing Sequoia Energy U.S. Inc. in this matter.
And who do you have at the table with you,
please? And we also have with us the gentleman who we're going to use as witnesses today. That's Ian Witherspoon and Rob Butte. They will be the two witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Bendish, please.
Annette Bendish, legal counsel for the Public Service Commission. With me at the table is Jerry Lane, an analyst with the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Ms. Bendish. And as I understand, there's no interveners in this matter today?
There's no interveners, and because commission staff is not taking an advocacy role in this proceeding, I would ask that Mr. Lane be allowed to ask the witnesses questions instead of filtering them through counsel.
Your request is granted. Is there anyone in the audience today? There's a big audience today, and the commission's glad to see that, I'm sure. Anyone in the audience who may have information to present to the commission either as a proponent of the application or as a protestant of the application that wishes to testify before the commission today? If there is anybody like that, please raise your hand. The commission encourages public participation, so if anybody knows at this time that they want to present testimony, give information to the commission about this application, please raise your hand at this time. Okay, we have one person. I'm going to pass a sign-up sheet around. Maybe we can start that right now, Mr. Lean. The commission would like to have you sign your name. Everybody that's in attendance today that's not up at the table here, if you could please sign your name and indicate on there if you'd like to present information, give testimony to the commission today. And I'll announce later in the proceedings when that testimony will be given, so I'll make sure that we get you up here. Of course, to my right are members of the Public Service Commission. To my right, Commissioner Brian Kalk, Commission Chairman Kevin Kramer, and Commissioner Tony Clark. I'm going to shortly give a brief summary of how we got here today, and then I'll call on them for their opening comments. Just briefly, on October 24th of 2008, Sequoia Energy filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize construction of a 150 megawatt Border Winds energy project consisting of up to 66 wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Rolette and Towner counties, North Dakota. On September 25th of this year, Sequoia revised its application, changing the Border Winds project area to entirely within Rolette County. The commission finds the application is complete, conditioned on the filing of final wind turbine locations. On September 29th of this year, the commission issued a notice of filing and notice of hearing. The public hearing that we're at today was scheduled by that notice in the City Commission room in Rolla. And the issues specified in that notice are as follows, and these are the only issues for the hearing today. Will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Secondly, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And third, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? Those are the issues for the hearing today. At this time, I'll call on the commissioners, starting with Commissioner Clark, who has the electric generation and transmission portfolio. Commissioner Clark, please.
Thank you, Judge Hoberg. And thank you for all being here today. These are truly remarkable times in North Dakota when we talk about energy development and the amount of development that's taken place. I've been on the commission for about 9 years now, and I can tell you that in about the first 5 years of that time on the commission, you could probably count on one hand the number of pipeline cases, transmission line cases, wind farm siting cases, and other energy facility type cases that the commission cited. Now, since then, we've seen literally dozens of applications and held numerous hearings just like this, be it with wind farms or pipelines, transmission lines, and it's all related to the tremendous resources that we have here in North Dakota and what the rest of the country needs. Now, as state officials and as North Dakotans, I suppose all of us on the commission can't help but be excited and interested about what this means for our state, the level of investment that it means for our state. But on the other hand, as commissioners, we have this separate duty under state law, which is that we have to ensure that the way that energy development takes place is done in a responsible manner, that it's done in such a way that it protects our human and our cultural, our environmental resources. And that's really what this hearing is about today, is to establish that record. With regard to establishing the record, just a few notes. I hope that if you do wish to give the commission some information, that you do it. Don't feel shy at all about getting up and testifying. One of the things, if you haven't been to one of these particular types of proceedings before, that you'll notice is they tend to be fairly formal. And the reason that they are formal isn't because we want to intimidate people from coming up and speaking. The reason is because under the law, it's an administrative action that we're taking here today. And so any decision that the commission makes under the law has to be done with sworn testimony, has to have cross-examination available, and has to, the information that the commission makes its decision on has to be built here at the hearing today. So if you have anything that you want to tell us, please do it here today, because it's not like a city commission proceeding or legislative proceeding or something like that where you have an opportunity outside of this hearing to chat with us and give us information on the record. So we really do want to hear from you, even though it's perhaps a little bit more formal than you may be used to. But again, your attendance here today, really the great turnout that is here today, speaks a lot to how important this is to the area, and we do want to hear from you. Before I turn it over to my fellow commissioners, I want to welcome a couple of and recognize a couple of former colleagues of mine in the House and friends, Merle Boucher and Tracy Beau. I saw Tracy earlier. See, there he is. Welcome, representatives. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thanks all of you for being here. Your very presence here serves as testimony to how important this is to your community, and it's really quite heartwarming. Tracy, by the way, your wife called and said, if you don't get all the beans off while the sun's shining, you're in trouble. So if you need to testify early, we welcome that. We'll accommodate that. This is really fun for me for a number of reasons, not the least of which is this is my hometown. I spent the first 5 years of my life in Rolla, lived in a duplex next to people who still live here in town, of course, the McAdees. And my dad was a lineman for Baker Electric when it was still Baker Electric, worked with Ray Hansen. And in those days, you used to be able to go out on a trouble call with your dad, so I used to watch him climb poles around here quite a bit. I welcome as well Leader Boucher and Representative Beau. It's good to have them here. The leader and I talk about Rolette County a lot in the capital, don't we, Merle? Yeah, we do. He keeps me up to date. At any rate, we really do welcome your input. Not just welcome it, we encourage it. Even admonish you to participate if there's anything on your mind or your heart, or if you have evidence to present. It's really important that you do it here today. There is no question that's bad, and there's no comment that's not welcome. So we appreciate that. You know, when I joined the commission 6 years ago, I think there were 5 megawatts of commercial energy, wind energy, being produced in North Dakota. By the end of this year, there'll be over 1,100, and there are about 5,000 megawatts in our docket for development at some point in the future. And who knows how much more there might be, but it is a remarkable time. As Tony said, it is our job not only to advocate for good energy development in North Dakota, but more importantly, to make sure that the energy development that is being done in North Dakota is done well and done right and done in a way that does have minimal adverse impact on people and cultural and natural resources that are as precious a commodity to us as are our minerals and our wind. So we're here to protect that, and you as citizen participants in this hearing help us do that very well. So I always say the best part of public life is the public, and it's great to see so many of you here today. Thank you, and we look forward to a very thorough hearing.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Cog, please.
Well, I also just want to echo the thoughts of my fellow commissioners. Thanks for coming out here today. And I have to keep reminding myself, the court reporter, she told me to slow down when I talk the last time I get going too fast, so I'll try to do that. But I think it's kind of interesting that Kevin grew up right here in Raleigh, and I grew up just west of here in Turtle Mountains and Botano. So I don't know if there's some significance that both of us grew up here. Merle, did you have something to do with us getting on the commission? I don't know. Merle carries a lot of weight. But thanks to the legislators for being here. You've got good folks here representing you. What's important to me, I guess, is just what you've also already heard is that we hear the good and the bad about all kinds of development because, you know, Tony's been in the commission for 9 years, Kevin's been there for 6 years, I've been here for a year. And the reason I wanted to be in the commission is to be part of the discussion of the development of energy in our state, whether it's wind or oil or coal or natural gas. We want to have responsible development. You know, growing up in this part of the state, we want to make sure we preserve the way we have our farming and our ranching and to find that nice blend of energy development and meeting the needs. So that's why it's so important that all of you take time to give us your thoughts because, as Tony said, you know, don't be intimidated by it. We want to hear everything about this. And the last thing I guess I'd leave you with is that, you know, growing up in Botano, we came to Rolla a lot and we played football and we never won a football game against Rolla. And I hear now that Rolla is playing Langdon for the semi-championship game, so I'm glad to see the community is carrying on that tradition and look forward to hearing your thoughts today.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Along those lines of formality, I'm going to explain the hearing procedure today that we're going to follow. As can be expected, I'm going to call on the applicant, Mr. Morrison, to present the applicant's case in this matter, and he's indicated that he's calling two witnesses. And those witnesses will answer questions by Mr. Morrison, and then I'll give Commission Counsel an opportunity to ask those witnesses questions. Then the Commission will have an opportunity to ask some questions. Following that, I'll entertain such further questions as of the witnesses as may be necessary. As indicated, the Commission staff is not presenting a case today, so following the applicant's presentation of their case, I'm going to call on public testimony, anyone in the audience, and we've had one person indicate that he wishes to testify, and of course, as you've heard from the Commission, the Commission encourages testimony, so think about it, and if you have something you want to present to the Commission, say to the Commission in the way of information, we'll have you come up. Don't be intimidated by coming up to the podium here, but we need to have you at a microphone so we can hear you. And if you do testify, I'll have to give the applicant and the commission staff and the commission an opportunity to ask you questions, but don't let that deter you. That's part of the formality of the hearing. When we've completed that portion, I'll then ask Mr. Morrison if he has anything further he wishes to present in rebuttal in regard to this matter. He may or may not have anything further he wishes to present. After all of the evidence is presented, I'll turn the matter back over to the Commission. They won't be reaching a decision today. They'll review all of the evidence later, and they're charged with issuing findings of fact and conclusions of law and an order in regard to this matter, whether to issue, deny, or take other appropriate administrative action in regard to the application. If the applicant doesn't agree with the decision of the Commission, they may have appeal rights or other rights under the Administrative Agencies Practice Act or under the rules of the Commission. Again, I stated the three issues for the hearing today. Those will be the three issues that we discuss today. The burden of proof in this matter is on the applicant to show by the greater weight of the evidence that it's entitled to the application it is seeking. Any questions about the procedures today, Mr. Morrison? Ms. Bendish?
Your Honor.
Anybody in the public have any questions about the procedures we're following today? And again, when we get to that point, when we're taking public input, we'll probably take a little recess, and then I'll see if there's anybody else that wishes to present testimony. Mr. Morrison, did you want to make an opening statement?
Very briefly, Judge Holberg, members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. As I indicated business aspects, who Sequoia is, what the project is, why it's where it is, and that type of information.
Excuse me a second. Can you all hear back there? You all hearing that? Okay, good.
And Mr. Butte then will talk about the environmental reviews and other similar reviews that have been done and the likely environmental effects and other effects of the project on the local community and environment. And with that, our first witness would be Ian Witherspoon.
All right. I'm required by law to admonish witnesses, and I'm required, this is for the benefit of anybody that's going to testify today, I'm required by law to tell all witnesses that the maximum penalty for perjury in this state is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum 5 years imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. And, of course, perjury is essentially telling the truth or not telling the truth in a hearing such as this. Mr. Witherspoon, being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Witherspoon, for the record, would you give us your name, give us your business address, and tell us by whom you're employed and in what capacity?
Ian Witherspoon, business address is 259 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Suite 210. My position with the company is the manager of project development and responsible for all aspects of developing projects from site initiation to pre-construction.
Can you give us a brief description or some background information on Sequoia and tell us who Sequoia is, a little bit about what the business of Sequoia is?
Sequoia Energy U.S. is 100% owned direct subsidiary of Sequoia Energy, Inc. Our head office is in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We presently are involved in over 70 active sites across the center of North America, including in Wyoming, Montana, Kansas, North Dakota, New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia. We are majority owned by Good Energies Investments, which is a private equity investor in renewable energy projects. They have invested approximately $6 billion in solar, wind, and green building companies within the world. Sequoia has, as I said, a head office in Winnipeg and also has offices in North Dakota, Montana, Colorado, and British Columbia, Canada. We perform a variety of turnkey project operation from site selection and research to project financing and project operation. We were the primary developer of the 100 megawatt wind farm at St. Leon, Manitoba, which is approximately 90 miles northeast of Rolla. That project achieved commercial operation in 2006.
Thank you. Judge Holbrook, I'm going to have this witness identify a few of the exhibits because we'll use them in his testimony. It'll just make it flow a little better. So, Ian, first I'm going to hand you two exhibits. When we provided the official exhibits to the court reporter, I believe the commissioners, all the staff already has these exhibits. But will you tell us what have been marked as Exhibits 1 and 2?
Exhibit 1 is the project layout indicating turbine locations, roads, underground cable network, substation and collector station, operation and maintenance building, and the setbacks from the occupied residences. We also have a larger copy up behind us. Exhibit 2 is the project layout again, but showing exclusion and avoidance areas and mapped and legend on the left.
Now, both of those maps have been prepared by Westwood Professional Services, is that correct?
That's correct.
But you reviewed them, and are you satisfied that they accurately show the current layout of the projected project?
Yes, they do.
And then can you also tell us what we've marked or identify what we've marked as Exhibit 3 and Exhibit 4?
Exhibit 3 is our application as of October 23rd, 2008, sent in to the Public Service Commission. And Exhibit 4 is the supplement, September 25th, 2009 supplement to the application, and it includes the revised Exhibits 1 through 18.
Judge Holbrook, we're going to use the subsequent witness to identify the remaining environmental kinds of reports, but with that, we would offer this time Exhibits 1 through 4.
Any objection to Exhibits 1 through 4?
I have have no objection. Just to clarify which maps we're referencing as Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2, that's Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2 that are part of Commission Docket Number 21, correct?
Yes, they were filed last week, I believe.
Thank you.
And Exhibit 3 and 4 are not part of that Docket 21, are they?
Not part of Docket 21. They have been filed with the
right.
Commission.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Exhibits 1 through 4 are admitted.
Thank you. Ian, can you give us a little background about the Border Winds Wind Energy Project and a little description of what that project is, please?
We began working in this area approximately fall of 2004, doing site selection, wind data collection, and some of the environmental work through Westwood Professional Services. The project area is approximately 52.5 square miles, within Rolette County, and the south boundary of the project would be approximately 3 miles north of the city of Rolla. West boundary being a line drawn north of the city of St. John to the U.S.-Canada border, the north boundary being the U.S.-Canada border, and the east boundary, the Rolette town or county boundaries. We're proposing up to 66 turbines, each with a nameplate capacity of 2.3 megawatts, and a total project nameplate capacity of approximately 150 megawatts. Assuming a net capacity factor of between 37 and 40%, the projected annual average output is estimated to be between 486,000 and 526,000 megawatt hours. The project will also include a collector system of underground cables and a collector station, an operation as a maintenance facility and a substation to connect to the 230-kilovolt XL transmission line located approximately 2 miles east of town, or east of the city of Rolla, sorry. While the project area is approximately 52.5 square miles, the layout will only occupy about 2% of that area.
And can you also describe for the commission what Sequoia sees as the need for this particular project?
According to a report prepared for the State of North Dakota's Division of Community Services, North Dakota is motivated to become a leading state in wind energy development. In support of this goal, Sequoia Energy offers North Dakota and the Mid-Continent Area Power Pool in the MISO region the opportunity to add to capacity adequacy requirements to stabilize wholesale power prices and to provide electricity from a clean, cost-effective renewable energy facility. If you note in Table 2-1 at page 9 of the application, it shows the Mid-Continent Area Power Pool surplus deficit forecast through to 2017, and this shows a substantial deficit in the coming years. The project also supports the objectives of the Federal American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. The Recovery Act has as some of its goals to achieve a rapid deployment of renewable energy and electric power transmission projects. The power meets the primary purposes of the Recovery Act, which are job preservation, job creation, infrastructure investment, energy efficiency and science, assistance to the unemployed, and state and local fiscal stabilization.
Why was the Rolette County area picked as the location for this particular wind power project?
The site selection was twofold. Our desktop and field studies confirmed that this area was an optimal site from an environmental, wind resource, transmission, and economic perspective. What also was crucial to this area was the work that the Rolla Job Development Authority had already undertaken to collect wind data in this area to show that it was a good area to do wind development in. And we were able to work in partnership with the JDA and use that data and to help move this project forward.
Can you give the commission a brief description of the type of wind technology that you plan to use in the project?
We're proposing to use the Siemens 2.3-101 wind turbine. The 2.3 meaning a 2.3 megawatt nameplate capacity, And the 101 is the windswept rotor diameter, which is 101 meters, which would mean each blade would be approximately 49 meters in length. The hub height is 80 meters on a cylindrical or tapered tubular steel tower. And the turbine cuts in at a wind speed of 4 meters per second and cuts out at a speed of 25 meters per second.
Ian, we've posted on the wall exhibits 1 and 2, which are maps. Maybe using either one of those maps or both, whatever you're comfortable with. Do you want to give a little description of the project layout and the design of the project and why the towers are where they are?
The layout consists of 15 arrays, and by arrays I mean rows or strings of turbines. The number of turbines in each of those rows ranges from 2 to 7, maximum of 7 in a row. We've also indicated on the layout proposed alternative locations should any of the other ones need to be relocated. I think there's 8 or 10 of those. The orientation of the turbine rows is generally a southwest to northeast orientation in order to capture the prevailing northwest and south winds. There will be access roads to each turbine in order to facilitate maintenance, and those access roads will come off the county grid roads where required. Each turbine is interconnected by an underground cable, electrical cable, as are each row, and those electrical cables will collect at the collector station near the 230 kilovolt line on the east side of the project. A substation will be required to be built at the 230 kilovolt line in order to connect to the XL power line. There will be an operations and maintenance building located in the southeast area of the project.
And can you also describe for us the setbacks that Sequoia has used in designing this project? What types of setbacks you try to comply with?
When the project layout was designed, a setback distance of 500 meters or 1,640 feet was used for setbacks from occupied structures. And of the 66 proposed turbines, 63 are at least at the 1,640-foot distance from building sites. Of the three turbines that are not, turbine C1 is 1,515 feet from an occupied residence. K1 is at 1,600 feet, and M1 is 1,515 feet. So those distances are still greater than 400 meters or a quarter of a mile. We also used a setback distance of 1.1 times the turbine height to locate from property boundaries, transmission lines, roads, and railways. And 1.1 times the turbine height is approximately 471 feet.
I believe in the application we may have referred to that as a 460-foot setback. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was based on a 95-meter rotor. And it has been changed to the 101-meter distance.
And it's still the 1.1 times a rotor. It's just you've changed your equipment, so that's changed the setback.
That's correct.
And you've complied with that 471-foot setback.
Yes. We've also included a quarter-mile buffer from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service waterfall production areas.
Let's talk specifically about one location. Is Alt-N, I think, is the one. There's one location I understand is actually approximately 700 feet from an occupied trailer house. Is that correct?
That is correct, and we are taking measures to move it to the proper distance.
So essentially you won't be utilizing that alternate location?
No, it won't.
Okay. Why don't you give us also a little description of the construction process, what you'll be doing to construct the wind project?
Construction will consist of improving existing access roads and within the project site to facilitate movement of equipment and turbine parts. Construction of roads adjacent to where the wind turbines will be located to allow construction and continuing service of those wind turbines. There will be clearing and grading for turbine foundations and installation. Trenching will take place for the underground cabling between the turbines and to the collector site. an installation of the on-site feeder system for connecting all the strings and in conjunction with the substation. There'll be installation of the wind turbines and permanent meteorological towers, installation of any site fencing and security that is going to be required, and in the post-construction restoration and vegetation of disturbed land when construction activities have completed.
Can you describe for us the status of the acquisition of easements or other property rights that you need to construct and operate this project?
We currently have all the easements required in order to do the project.
And what is the process that you'll follow to commission the project once the construction has been completed?
Once completed, inspection and testing will occur for each component on the wind turbines, as well as the communication system, meteorological system, obstruction lighting, high voltage collector and feeder system, and the SCADA system.
Excuse me, everybody still catching all this back there? Everybody hearing okay? Okay, thank you. Mr. Morrison, please.
Thank you. Will you also describe for us the maintenance schedule or how the towers in the project are going to be maintained once the project does become operational?
The project is expected to have a lifetime of 25 to 30 years for the first turbines installed. During this period, the project will be operated and maintained by a team of approximately 15 on-site permanent staff. The operations maintenance building will be situated where all the necessary equipment will be housed to perform regular maintenance, including vehicles, tools, spare parts, and some consumables. Monitoring of the turbines will also occur at the operation and maintenance building using the SCADA system. Routine operations include monitoring and control of the wind turbines from a centralized computer in the operations building and resetting the turbine controls and restarting turbines after any outages from that building. Wind turbine performance will be analyzed for preventative maintenance and for any operational and performance improvements. It is anticipated that the first 5 years of operation maintenance will be conducted by the manufacturer during the warranty period.
And what's the current construction schedule for this project?
We are projecting to start construction June of 2010, provided we achieve all pre-construction permits and approvals. We anticipate construction to take approximately 18 months, with testing and operations to begin early 2011 and first commercial operation in mid to late 2011.
Can you tell us what the status is of any contracts or discussions for the sale of the power to be generated by this project?
We are currently in discussion with a few of the companies that are purchasing power within the region. Right now, due to the level of negotiation and discussion with those power off-takers, we are unable to provide too much detail or name on those companies and because of a confidentiality agreement.
But you would be willing to provide information as to those contracts once they are completed, is that correct?
Yes, once they are completed, we can provide that information.
And what's your total estimated cost of project?
The cost of the project is estimated to be just over $360 million.
And finally, can you describe for us the process that Sequoia now intends to undertake for decommissioning when the life of the project ends?
Yeah, for decommissioning the project, we are under contractual obligation to the landowners to remove all wind power facilities and any underground infrastructure to a depth of 48 inches. Sequoia will remove, and restore the area to substantially the same physical condition as pre-construction. We're committed to the decommissioning conditions were also contained in the easements and the Public Service Commission regulations.
And Ian is correct that Sequoia has filed with the Commission a signed certification of some matters that the Commission staff requested prior to this hearing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And Sequoia remains committed to complying with that certification.
That's correct.
With that, I don't have any further questions of this witness.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Bendish, do you have any questions of Mr. Witherspoon?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lean, does he have any?
Yeah, I would ask, you said there was one alternate location. Did you say within 700 feet of a mobile home? And what number is that on the map?
It's alternate N.
Alternate N. Okay, and it was 700 feet, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's all the questions I had. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Ling. Commissioner Clark, please.
Just a couple, thanks. The interconnection agreement that you mentioned that you'll be, is it executed with Xcel or is it something that you're seeking?
We are seeking with a more than one company.
Right, I mean, not the PPA itself, but the interconnection.
Interconnection would be with Xcel Energy. That's right.
Right, and now has that interconnection agreement with Line been executed yet, or is that something that comes in the future? Or?
No, we haven't. We are waiting for the completion of the facility study. Mm-hmm. For the key position,
okay.
And the interconnection agreement would be done subsequent to that.
Okay, is that a 230 kV?
Yes, it is.
Line, is that the what we sometimes refer to as the Harvey to Glenboro?
Yes.
Line, okay. Out of curiosity, to what degree meteorologically does the position of the wind farm have to do with the Turtle Mountains themselves? In other words, does the wind, I mean, it hugs fairly close to the Turtle Mountains, is the wind capacity better because of its proximity to it?
Not being a meteorologist, and our Met towers don't actually tell us why; they just tell us what it is. I couldn't tell you if it is or isn't.
Sure, I was just curious if it's sort of like a funnel or something, you know, that they
it
the
could
wind
be
comes off the ridge. Questions about. Noise and flicker, specifically related to the 2.3 megawatt towers. Should we ask that to you or the next witness?
I can take it.
Okay.
Okay, I'll hold those for later. That's all the questions I have. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Sure, just a couple, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Witherspoon. You had referenced the Recovery Act as being a relevant, I guess. Is that just sort of to bolster your position, or did the Recovery Act itself have some bearing on choosing to do this project? And if so, is there some federal incentive beyond what was available prior to the Recovery Act that led to this decision?
Because we had started the project before the Recovery Act was brought in, but it is addressing the needs that were brought forward within the Recovery Act, especially the desire to have rapid renewable energy brought on, mm-hmm. as well as employing workers and laborers within the country.
But there were no additional incentives
were
given to do the good work you were already doing?
No.
Okay. Regarding labor, and forgive me if you answered this, do you intend to use a lot of local labor as well as local contractors, or have you thought through that yet when it comes to the construction part of it?
We will be looking for a general build of plant contractor to do the project, and encouragement of hiring on local people will be there. Again, it's one of those things where we have to make sure the people are skilled and can work within the construction environment that's going to be here. But no, definitely local people will be encouraged to be hired.
Then just one final question. Have you heard from or had any discussions with any local area applicators, the crop sprayers, anything like that? Has that been part of the consideration at all, or have you talked to any?
Yes, we have had discussion. Originally, when we started the project back in 2004, there was discussion then, and we have had recent discussion as well. Yeah.
Okay. And any concerns expressed, or that were they been addressed, or?
Well, there's been concerns just simply because there'll be new structures on the landscape, mm-hmm. in the areas that they are flying. And we have addressed the concern by offering a willingness to work with them to turn turbines off and turn them in a in an orientation that would best suit their flying pattern when they're when they are applying.
So that will require obviously some pretty good communication between applicators in your company.
Yes, it will. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Cock, please.
You know, being a third guy, a lot of times your questions come down the way. But back to Tony's point, I can tell you the wind always blows out of the northwest up here. So whatever money you guys spent to study that, I could have told you that. It always blows out of the northwest. I guess a general knowledge question for me is that where are your North Dakota offices? You said you have them, but where are they at for the record?
We have an office right here in Rolla at
okay.
113 Main Avenue, and we are in the process of establishing another office at Sherwood.
Sherwood, any plans? I think I heard somewhere maybe Bismarck at some point, or is that still developing?
Yes, we would like to set up an office in Bismarck, that's right.
Because I guess the you know, I'm not an attorney, that's what and these folks are for, but you know, is there anything special with your headquarters being in Winnipeg that might come into play on this in a legal framework as this thing develops? If, you know, if we're doing a Basin Electric project and something comes up, you know, Basin's right there in Bismarck, there's definitely a direct way to get to those folks. Is there anything special that you're aware of that might come into play with your main office being in Winnipeg?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Is that for my counsel? Is that something that we could look at later that we should just, I don't have a general knowledge point there.
Perhaps Mr. Morrison has some comment on that. Or
I guess the only comment I would have is, although the ownership may be Canadian, the corporation itself is a Delaware corporation that's authorized to do business in the state, and obviously they're subject to process.
Okay, so that's the point I didn't know there. Okay. I think that answers my question.
And maybe, I'm not even sure if they filed that, but so maybe I should have Ian just for the record confirm that, in fact, Sequoia is a Delaware corporation, is authorized to do business in the state of North Dakota.
Yes, it has been filed. We are authorized to do business in North Dakota.
Okay, thank you very much. And the last question, I guess, is kind of a follow-up from Commissioner Kramer's about, this is not so much the aerial spraying, but on the aviation part of it. You know, I did 20 years in the Marine Corps. I wasn't a pilot, but I was a ground guy. And even flying in today, you know, what kind of impact did just the landing field may this have? Is that something that's been looked at?
Yeah, there is a zoning ordinance for the airport that restricts the any turbines from being located within a 3-mile radius of the airport, and that was due to their height restriction from the landing strip.
So that's all included in here, that everything meets the local airport requirements?
Yes, it does.
And it doesn't require anything being turned off, they can do operations without having to do anything different?
Yep.
Okay, that's all I'd have.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Mr. Morrison, any further questions of Mr. Witherspoon?
Nothing further this time.
Ms. Bendish, anything further? Any further questions, commissioners? Thank you, Mr. Witherspoon. Please call your next witness.
Our next witness will be Rob Boutte.
Mr. Boutte, did you hear the admonition I gave earlier in regard to perjury?
Yes.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison, please. Yeah. Bring that closer to you, perhaps. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Boutte, can you give us your name for the record, tell us by whom you're employed and what capacity, and also give us your business address, please?
My name is Rob Boutte. I'm employed by Westwood Professional Services at 7699 Anagram Drive, Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and I'm employed as an senior environmental scientist.
And can you also give us a little description of your educational professional background in the environmental consulting field?
I have a master's degree in environmental and forest biology from the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry. A bachelor's of science degree with a double major in wildlife management and biology from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, and an associate's of applied science degree in natural resources conservation from the University of Minnesota at Crookston. And I'm certified as a senior ecologist by the Ecological Society of America and as a wetland delineator by the state of Minnesota.
And how long have you been acting as an environmental consultant?
I've been an environmental consultant for 19 years with Westwood Professional Services. I've been working on wind projects for approximately the past 5 years, and I've been in the natural resources, wetland, and wildlife management fields for approximately 25 years.
And what's your involvement been in this particular project?
I've been the project manager for all the environmental and cultural resources and permitting aspects of the project, and coordinated staff and edited and coordinated preparation of all reports.
And you had a great deal of input into the application and the supplement to the application that have already been identified, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you've also been responsible for preparation of some other environmental studies and surveys, is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm going to show you what we've marked as Exhibit 5, and can you tell us what that is?
That's the pre-construction avian survey and risk assessment that was completed based on the field survey of avian species in the spring of 2009.
And then tell us what Exhibit 6 is.
Exhibit 6 is the Class 3 Intensive Cultural Resources Inventory that was completed as a result of the Cultural Resources Field Survey that was done in the spring of 2009.
And Exhibit 7?
Exhibit 7 is the Wetland Delineation Report that was completed based on wetland delineation fieldwork in the summer of 2009.
And then finally, Exhibit 8.
Exhibit 8 is the rare species and natural community assessment that was completed based on records of rare species supplemented by fieldwork done in the summer of 2009.
And you've supervised the preparation of all of those reports, is that correct?
That's correct.
And to the best of your knowledge, are they all true and accurate?
Yes. Yes.
I'll offer the, I'm going to offer into evidence at this time Exhibits 5 through 8.
Thank you. Any objection to Exhibits 5 through 8? All right. Exhibits 5 through 8, as indicated by Mr. Bote, are admitted.
Rob, why don't we talk first about exclusion areas. Are you familiar with the PSC's determination of exclusion areas and what those exclusion areas are?
Yes, I am.
And were they considered in the locating of this particular project?
Yes, they were.
Why don't you describe the exclusion areas that either are affected or are potentially affected by this project, and maybe you want to refer them to a particular table in the application if that helps in your discussion?
Okay, the table in the application is table 3.1 on page 11 of the original application, and Table 3.1 is revised on page 3 of the supplement to the application that was submitted in September 2009. Of the exclusion areas, the designated national wildlife and natural areas, there are no impacts on those areas. Designated or registered state areas, there are two areas within the 52.5 square mile project area that have either been nominated or are listed on the National Register of Historic Places and in the State Register of Historic Places. Those are the St. John Border Station, basically the customs office on the Canadian border, which is nominated, and an older structure called the Coghlan Castle, which is located roughly in the west central portion of the project area.
Could you spell that for us? It was Bolin or?
Coghlan.
Coghlan.
It's C-O-G-H-L-A-N-D.
Thank you.
Both of those historic structures will be sufficiently avoided by the project, and our lead archaeologist has given us the opinion that they will not be affected visually by the project because both of those structures are buffered by trees to some extent. There are no county parks or recreation areas or municipal parks or hardwood draws in the project area. There are prime and unique farmlands in the project area, but the project is not expected to affect more than 0.4% of the production of the top five commodity crops in Rolette County. There's no irrigated land in the project area. There's no critical life stage areas for threatened and endangered species in the project area, although there may be threatened and endangered species that actually occur or that have range that overlaps the project area. And we've not identified any impacts on unique rare animal or plant species, even though there were some records identified by the North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department in conjunction with the project area as a result of their natural heritage database survey.
But those just simply indicated there was potential for those species to be present, is that correct?
Yeah, they had identified some records of rare species and rare habitats from approximately 22 or 23 years ago.
And that's one of the issues that was investigated by the surveys you've identified?
Yes, those were addressed by Exhibit 8 under the Rare Species and Natural Community Assessment Report.
So then the only exclusion areas that are potentially impacted are the two historic sites you mentioned that are buffered by trees an adequate distance, and the farmland, prime farmland, which has been minimized. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why don't you also then go on and talk about the avoidance areas that are present within the project area?
Okay, the most of the avoidance areas that are listed under the North Dakota Public Service Commission rules aren't actually included in the project area, so I'll just hit on the ones that are included. And the primary one is woodlands and wetlands, and those will be avoided to the extent practicable. We've taken that step by delineating wetlands and mapping wetlands at various levels of details. And cultural resources, I'm getting ahead of myself. Those are the only real avoidance area in the project area are the wetlands and the wetlands.
Okay. Well, let's talk, you started to mention cultural resources. Why don't you go back to Exhibit 6, and that is your cultural resource inventory that was done on the ground, is that correct?
That's correct.
And did that indicate that there are any cultural resources other than the St. John Border Station, Coghlan Castle, you've already discussed that need protection?
There were 7 new archaeological finds and 3 historic sites discovered as part of the Class 3 Intensive Cultural Resources Inventory. However, none of those were considered to be eligible for the National Register of Historic Places.
And Westwood has been in contact with the State Historic Preservation Office about that study, is that correct?
That's correct. The State Historic Preservation Office initially concurred with Westwood's recommendation to initiate this type of study. And as recently as October 13th of 2009, we were in coordination with them concerning our plans to complete and submit this report upon completion of a supplemental field investigation that will be wrapped into the final report.
And what supplemental field investigation remains to be done?
The alternate turbine locations need to be investigated in the field yet by the cultural resources team, as well as the cable routes and the roadways, access roadways that would connect to those alternate turbines. And also the location of the proposed substation for the interconnection and the O&M facility construction yard location.
Why don't we look at then Exhibit 7 for a minute, and can you tell us about the conclusions that you reached in Exhibit 7 with respect to the wetlands delineation and any existence of wetlands in the area?
As part of the wetland delineation and the wetland delineation report, we delineated in the field with some mapping assistance in cases where the wetland signatures were not visible in the field due to cropping in certain areas, but there were a total of 317 wetlands identified and delineated and mapped within 800 feet of the proposed project construction area, in an area, total area, that covered about 6.5 square miles. Most of those wetlands, 296 of them, were isolated wetlands. There were 21 wetlands that were connected to streams or creeks or drainages.
And is it possible to avoid at least most of these wetlands in construction of this project?
The vast majority of them will be avoided. There are a number of areas there. I believe as initially when we first looked at it, about 15 areas where there will be crossings necessary for access roads to access the turbines that need to cross over streams and creeks or long linear drainages. And that's a consequence of two things. One, the abundance of wetlands and stream corridors in the project area. And two, the interconnected linkage of roadways and cables that's necessary to have the interconnected wind farm.
But it would be your intent to minimize those disturbances to the extent practical, is that correct?
That's correct.
And again, I think we've talked about this a little bit, but Exhibit 8 is your rare species assessment, and that then concluded that none of the species that had been previously identified were currently present in the project area, is that correct?
None of the species that were previously identified were documented to be present in the project area. As is frequently the case with rare species, it's easier to prove presence than absence. So some of these species, such as the whooping crane, could still occur from time to time in the project area when they migrate through the project area. But a lot of the conclusions concerning the potential impacts and potential presence of the rare species were based on the suitability and availability of habitats rather than actual proof of presence or absence.
And did you also consider the commission's site selection criteria that have been set forth in their rules, regulations, and guidelines?
Yes, we did.
Can you tell us what you found with respect to those site selection criteria?
In terms of agricultural production, the total project for construction of the turbines and the access roads and everything is expected to affect, when you total it all up, all the different components, roughly 100 to 120 acres. For family farms and ranches, as discussed previously, the turbines will be set back approximately 1,600 feet from occupied family homes, and lease payments will be made to landowners who have turbines on their lands, and Sequoia staff know more about those particular arrangements than I do. The land in the project area, none of the land in the project area, to our knowledge, is considered economically suitable for irrigation. The surface drainage patterns and groundwater flow patterns are not anticipated to be affected. Neither is the agricultural quality of the cropland, because the soils will be decompacted after construction. The project is not anticipated to affect the availability or adequacy of law enforcement, school systems, government services, or general mental health care facilities or recreational programs. There will be some effect on transportation facilities and networks, particularly due to the increase in vehicle trips and truck traffic during construction. There's not adverse effects projected on retail services, and utility services will be coordinated with the MISO, the Midwest Independent Service Operator, to prevent impacts on the transmission system. Other impacts in terms of local institutions, noise, rural residences, aquifers, and human health and safety, things like that basically boil down to the 1,600-foot setback, which will keep the predicted noise level below 50 decibels or dBAs at residential receptors. And for human health and safety, the project will undergo federal aviation permitting to make sure that there's no hazard to air traffic. Animal health and safety, there'll be a small number of bats and birds that would be expected to be killed on an annual basis as a result of collisions with wind turbines, and this is fairly common for wind farms in various locations throughout the Midwest. The plant life effects basically boils down to, as I stated earlier, roughly 100 to 120 acres of land impact. Temporary housing will be used by construction staff during project construction. And as Ian mentioned earlier, local contractors will be employed to the extent possible and that can work during construction of the project. And there's no anticipated cumulative effects on as a result of the project or for planned facilities or other project developments.
Okay. Did you also consider the impacts the project will have on the policy criteria established by the commission?
Yes, we did.
And can you summarize what those impacts are?
And regarding energy, the project will maximize the energy output and through optimization of the project layout. Regarding utilization of labor, again, the look at the potential for using local labor. No residents are expected to be relocated as a result of the project. The project won't interfere with adjacent land use, and the developer, Sequoia Energy, is working with landowners to accommodate their interests and attitudes about the project. The energy will be transmitted through the XL transmission line and sold to a regional utility to be determined. And the impacts of construction will be restored through separating topsoil, stormwater pollution prevention plans, and soil decompaction following construction.
And then can you also summarize what the other impacts to resources are expected to be?
The demographic impacts will be primarily positive. The land use, again, it's roughly, construction footprint is roughly 100 to 120 acres, spread over the 52.5 square miles. In terms of public services, again, the project will abide by MISO's recommendations for transmission interconnection, human health and safety. Again, the project will meet FAA requirements and permitting. For noise, we mentioned the 1,600 foot setback from residences and how that would keep the noise level at 50 dBA or below at the residential receptors. Visual impacts will be minimized, and the project layout will be laid out and has been laid out in an environmentally sensitive manner. Cultural resources have been assessed within the construction corridors and will continue to be assessed. The rest of the factors have already been discussed to some extent related to the other resources.
And basically there are no negative impacts or substantial negative impacts on those remaining resources, is that correct?
That's correct.
Can you also tell the commission about the status of any other local, state, and federal permits that are required for this project?
Okay, we're still coordinating with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding the project footprint that will overlap wetland easement lands that are lands in which the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has easements that protect wetlands, and we'll be coordinating with them in the next couple days on that subject. We anticipate avoiding wetlands in those areas, but there are some things we need to do to ensure that actually happens. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the project will require a Section 404 permit for wetland impacts, and we anticipate submitting that permit application in the next few months. The United States Environmental Protection Agency will require a spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plan if the O&M facility, the operations and maintenance facility, exceeds the project threshold for above ground oil storage, and that remains to be investigated. The Federal Aviation Administration determination of no hazard application will be submitted after the micro-siting is complete, probably sometime in the next month or so. We will be reviewing title work for potential overlap with federal farm programs, such as federal farm real estate mortgages that are federally insured through the Farm Service Agency, and then there'll be some CRP contract, Conservation Reserve Program, contract amendments that will be necessary. The Public Service Commission hearing we're obviously at today, the project will require NPDES, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, general permitting from the North Dakota Department of Health. May require a septic tank and drain field permit from the Department of Health, and will also require Section 401 water quality certification in conjunction with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers wetland permitting. But the water quality certification comes from the Department of Health. The State Historic Preservation Office coordination is in process, and that'll be complete before the project construction starts. There are other permits required by the North Dakota Highway Patrol for overweight transportation of construction equipment and materials that'll be obtained prior to construction, and utility permits for roadway crossings from the North Dakota Department of Transportation and Rolette County. We'll coordinate with those road authorities to obtain those permits. And the Rowlett County conditional use permit application was submitted yesterday.
Also listed in the application, I think Appendix C indicates that there are some additional assessments that have been done to indicate that you have done some mitigative measures, including a microwave interference study and a noise assessment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why don't we talk then about, well, let's do it this way. We've also indicated in the application that we have sent letters to all of the necessary federal and state agencies and local agencies. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And have you gotten substantive comments from many of those agencies? Or maybe you want to just identify the ones that you've really gotten substantive comments.
Well, roughly about a third of them we've got responses from, and those include the Natural Resources Conservation Service, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Job Service of North Dakota, the North Dakota Department of Agriculture, the North Dakota Department of Health, the North Dakota Department of Transportation, the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission, the North Dakota Office of Attorney General, North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department, Rolette County, and Towner County.
Now those, is it fair to say that Fish and Wildlife Service is probably the most substantive of the comments that were received?
Yeah, that's fair.
And you're continuing to work with Fish and Wildlife Service and address their concerns, is that correct?
That's correct.
Have any state or federal agencies objected to the wind project at this point in time?
No.
In your opinion, if the wind farm is constructed as you've set it forth in the application and as you discussed today, will there be any significant long-term irreversible effects to the environment or cultural resources?
Not in my opinion.
I don't have any further questions of the witness at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Ms. Bendish, do you have any questions of Mr. Bouquet?
No,
thank you. Mr. Lean?
Yeah, I would ask one thing just to clarify. In table 3.1 in the supplement that was filed on 9/25, we have areas where animals or plant or species are unique or rare to North Dakota would be reversibly damaged, listed as both an exclusion area. And then in table 3.2 is an avoidance area. If I recall right, I think those are exclusion areas. And I'm wondering if we were talking, there's a different caption when it talks about proposed buffer in that column. I'm wondering if we're talking about the same rare plant community as calcareous fen. I think it says.
Oh, the calcareous fen?
Calcareous fen. Is this the same?
That's
just the same thing?
Yeah, that's the same plant community, and that was okay. Inadvertently listed in both tables. You're correct. That should have just have been listed as an exclusion area. Just for clarification, the calcareous fen that was located by the North Dakota Parks and Recreation Department is west of the project area, and our staff visited that site in the field and found that it did not, the vegetation community at that location was not consistent with what was documented there approximately 22 years ago.
Okay, thanks. The other thing I had question was the Rolette County, did they have any specific requirements or ordinances regarding wind generation, setbacks, or anything like that?
They have the Rolette County Zoning Resolution, which requires a conditional use permit for any towers greater than 50 feet in height. Their setback requirements are not specific to wind turbines, and because their setback requirements, basically what the ordinance or the zoning resolution says is that towers need to be set back at least 70 feet from the road right-of-ways, or in cases where there's not a clear road right-of-way, at least 100 feet from the center of the road. And due to the height of the turbines, they will be set back substantially farther than that.
Okay. Thanks. That's all the questions I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lean. Commissioner Clark, please.
Just a couple. I see you've got a number of surveys and background information related to noise and expected noise levels at different distances. Do you have any similar sort of assessments with regard to shadow flicker? It's something that we've heard about more in some of the more recent wind farm sighting cases that we have. I guess I didn't see anything in the application at all, but do you have any, did I miss something? Is there any information on shadow flicker, number of hours expected at given residences and so on and so forth?
Well, you didn't miss anything.
Okay.
Because we have not completed a shadow flicker study. I agree with you that it's starting to be raised more often as an issue. At this point in time, no one yet has requested a shadow flicker study on this project that I'm aware of.
Okay, could we have a late filed exhibit that would do that?
That's something that we could prepare, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Morrison, then that would be a late filed exhibit 9, then?
Yeah. Oh, do you have a time frame on completion?
Not at this time. I suspect it would probably be done within a month, but I don't know precisely.
I guess as long as perhaps we can coordinate with Ms. Bendish and staff as to if the time gets drug out too far, we may say that rather than as a late filed exhibit, that it would be a condition in the order. Rather than drag the order out too far, the order could be conditioned on completing such an assessment before the project's constructed. But if it can be done within a month, that would seem reasonable to get it incorporated into the order, too. So,
is that something that can work out with you, Ms. Bendish?
If Commissioner Clark is fine with the possibility of not having it before order and just putting language in the order to condition it upon that filing.
Sure. We just have to know the right language to have in the order. And we could go back to some previous sightings that we've done that have some pretty extensive comments with regard to what are acceptable standards for number of hours of shadow flicker, and we could draw on some of those resources, but either venue is fine with me.
Hopefully we can get it done and get incorporated in the orders.
Okay, you'll coordinate that with
Ms.
Bendish then. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
You'd mentioned some of the discussions you've had with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the whooping crane in particular. Is Sequoia a participant in the habitat conservation plan that's being developed between wind energy developers throughout the Great Plains and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
I believe the answer to that question is no, but I would defer to Ian to clarify that. And I would also clarify that we're aware of that study, the habitat conservation plan that's going on. I don't believe Sequoia.
Just for the record, Mr. Witherspoon's going to address that question, correct?
We participated in a conference in Denver a year and a half ago, but we have not been actively participating in anything further to that conference.
Okay.
If that's what your question is.
Sure, and it's mainly a liability question for mm-hmm. Sequoia as opposed to anything else, I think. But. Moving back to Mr. Bote, is the and we may get some testimony from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service later, but are you familiar with how close is this particular project with the generally assumed migration corridor for whooping cranes? It seems to me that memory serves it's a little bit to the east of the general corridor. But
yeah,
is that
it's
correct?
It's about roughly.
Yeah, why don't you move the mic back, please? Yeah.
The project area is roughly located on the eastern edge of the 200-mile migration corridor. The 200-mile wide migration corridor for whooping cranes, and of course, as the Fish and Wildlife Service might tell you too, that there's not a really hard line at